Thank you so much for being here this afternoon, and I hope that what I'm going to share with you this afternoon will be beneficial to you. Cell phones are going off. I would encourage you to place that thing on silent if you don't mind. It will help us to focus on what I'm going to try to share with you today. Starting on yesterday, we've been talking about relationships and biblical insights on how to achieve and maintain a strong relationship, whether relationship is between spouses, between family members, church members, co-workers. What biblical insights, what biblical thoughts are important for keeping relationships together? And on yesterday, we talked about three. For just a moment, I'd just like to show the teacher that's in me to mention those three that we talked about on yesterday, and today share with you three additional biblical insights for keeping a relationship strong, for keeping a relationship active and aggressive and growing. The first, in order to have a strong relationship, family members, spouses need to value one another. Value one another means you treasure one another. And if you're going to keep your relationship strong, you need to treasure the person and with whom you're having that relationship with. And I mentioned on yesterday, the reason Rhonda and I have been able to stay together for 33 years, 3 years dating, is because we treasure one another. I've been in the Lord's church now for 37 years. And the reason that I'm still in the church is because I value my relationship with God. When you treasure something, when you value something, you don't mind putting forth the energy and effort to keep the relationship going. So you need to value, you need to treasure your relationship. Number two, you need to never stop dreaming. Dreaming is visualizing, planning. And for a business to be successful, you have to plan. You have to strategize. And we talk about those three steps. You have to come up with goals and objectives and strategies. Well, the same thing in a relationship. You have to plan. You have to see yourself together 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now. Things that are successful don't just accidentally happen. You have to plan it. Amen? And I plan on being married to Rhonda until the day that I die. And all for that to occur, I have to strategize. I have to visualize. I have to plan to make sure we stay together. I want my boys to respect me and love me. And I want them to appreciate that daddy was a preacher and not to regret that daddy ever decided to be a preacher. And so I have to make sure that they enjoy the ministry that I'm involved in. And so that takes some effort and planning. Anything worth having is worth investing what? Some time and energy and planning. So you have to plan. You have to dream. Never stop dreaming. One of my favorite books in the Old Testament is the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. Nehemiah challenged the Israelites to dream. You see, Nehemiah became a prophet during the time that the walls have been torn down. And Nehemiah saw the destruction. And Nehemiah went to that destruction site and he challenged the Israelites to dream that the wall was going to be rebuilt. And sure enough, they came up with a plan and they dreamed, and one day the wall was completed. You know why? Nehemiah challenged the Israelites to dream. I challenge you to dream about your relationships getting stronger between your spouse, with your family members, with the church family, with your place of employment. You have to dream. You have to visualize things getting better. And then number three, we talked about on yesterday, be willing to make some sacrifices. You remember the poem, Cold Within, that those six men died not from the cold without. They all died from what? The cold within. The inability to make sacrifice, they're willing to give up a law that could have been used for the survival of all six of them, but they were so selfish. Don't be selfish. Be willing to make sacrifices for your relationship. Whatever changes you need to make, that your relationship with your husband or with your wife or with your parents or with your children, with your grandparents or with your church family, whatever sacrifices you need to make, what changes you need to make in yourself, be willing, be ready, be eager to make those changes. Now today, I want to share with you three additional biblical insights for keeping relationships strong. The first, number four, which will be the first for the day, be willing to forgive and live. Be willing to forgive and live. Avoid what I call scorekeeping. Avoid scorekeeping. You know, in relationship, you know why a lot of relationships die? It's because we scorekeep. We can remember stuff that happened 45 years ago. The day, whether it was raining, sunshine, and at a certain hour. And if you keep scorekeeping, bringing stuff up that happened 20 years ago, 5 years ago, you know what? You'll never grow. It'll dampen a relationship of becoming stronger. The reason I'm able to talk to you today is because my wife has forgiven me. I was a horrible husband when we first got married. I told you that yesterday. I was a horrible husband. The reason I can stand before you this afternoon and talk is because Rhonda has forgiven me. She doesn't keep bringing up, Sam, you remember when we first got married 30 years ago? You remember how you used to fuss at me about ironing your socks and ironing your t-shirts? You used to nag and nag and nag. I was a nagging husband, okay? Don't say men can't nag, because I know I was a nagging husband. I would get up and Rhonda would fry an egg and it wouldn't taste just like I wanted to take, and I would throw it back to her. I'm sorry, I did that. Rhonda, cook it right. I want it to taste just like mom's. And Rhonda would say, go home to your mother then. But you know what? I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. In relationships, you'll make mistakes. And what makes a relationship grow is when people can forgive and live. Forgive and live. Let me share with you a true story. I graduated from Freed Hardeman in 1979. 1 week before I graduate from Freed Hardeman University, one of my major professors gave me a paper. And I won't tell you too much because some of you may know try to figure out who the teacher was. But nonetheless, he had an A on my paper. And then when he realized, he said he did not look at the names and realized who the paper belonged to, he changed it to a C. And I saw the big mark out, an A plus. And then he changed it to a C minus. And I went to him and I said, hold, what's going on here? He said, that's not your paper. I said, oh, yes, it is. 1 week before I'm going to graduate. And he said, I'm not going to let you graduate. And I said, hold it. I don't mean to be disrespectful to you. I said, but when I leave this office, I'm going to the president and share with him our conversation. And he said, if you go to the president, you never will graduate from Freed Hardeman University. And I said, well, I'm going to the president. And his secretary, as I was leaving, stopped me and said, Sammy, calm down. I'll get him to change your grade back. Nonetheless, he changed my grade back. And I graduated from Freed Hardeman. When I left that Saturday, I vowed that I would never step grounds on Freed Hardeman University again as long as I lived. I hated that man. And for 20 plus years of my life, I despised that man. And here I was, a gospel preacher. And I was preaching about love, but I couldn't forget and let go of what that man did to me that day. And I would speak on lectureships with him, and I wouldn't even speak to him. I would pass by him, I'd just walk right straight by him. In 1983, Freed Hardeman University called me and said, Sammy, we want you to come and teach at Freed Hardeman University. I said, is so-and-so teaching there? I said, yeah. I said, as long as he's teaching there, I'll never step grounds on that campus. They called me back in 1988 and said, Sammy, we want you to come and teach here. I said, is he still teaching there? I said, yes. I said, I told you, I'll never come on that campus. I'll never come on that campus as long as he's there. And I'm still going out preaching. And then in 1990, I decided, man, if I was to die right now, I would be lost. It took me that long. If I was to die right now, I wouldn't make it to heaven, all because I can't let go. I didn't live, because every time I would turn around, I would think about this one little incident that amounted to little, really nothing. I let it deprive me of peace of mind and happiness. And I told my wife about it. I said, you know, honey, I'm going to let go of that. And in 1991, Fried Hardeman called me again and said, Sammy, will you please come and teach? And I said, yes. Yes. Yes, I'll be there. In 1992, I was speaking on a lectureship. And this brother was speaking there too. And I went up to him and I said my name. And he said, I know who you are. I said, you remember an incident that happened back in 1979? He said, I remember the incident. He said, Sammy, I'm sorry. And I said to him, I'm sorry. I said, for many years, I've held a grudge against you. He said, I know. He said, I should have made that phone call many years ago, and I didn't. And I said, I should have made that phone call many years ago. You know what? We had a long talk, forgave one another, and we're best of friends. Amen. But for many years, I held a grudge. I am so thankful. I am so thankful God allowed me to live long enough to mature. To mature. I have a relationship with a man now that I wished I'd had a relationship years ago. But you know what the problem was? Me. I couldn't let go. How many people have been deprived of wonderful relationships because they can't forgive and live? There are parents, there are grandparents, there are spouses that can't let go. I challenge you. If you want to live, let go of anything that would deprive you. I cannot think of anything that my boys could do today. I mean this. There's not a thing my boys can do today that I will ever tell them, boy, I cannot stand you. Get out of my house. I don't ever want to see you again. I mean, they can live some horrible life, but I will never disown them. They're going to always be my babies. If God can forgive me of things I have done, surely I can forgive others regardless of what they've done to me. You want to see some wonderful examples of forgiveness? Turn to Genesis chapter 50. Look at verses 15 through 21. The Bible is full of wonderful examples of forgiveness. And in Genesis chapter 50, we read about Joseph and his brothers. You remember how they sold him into Egyptian slavery? And now notice, imagine it had been you. How would you have felt about if I ever see those boys again, I'm going to cut them down. And never could forgive them. You just think about, man, look what they did to me because of jealousy and envy. To make a long story short, their daddy was dead. And they realized that now Joseph is taking care of them. And now the only reason they were still alive is because Joseph didn't want to kill them as long as the daddy was alive. And so daddy's dead. Now they're terrified that Joseph now is going to kill every one of them. And so they went up to Joseph and said, Joseph, our dad told us to tell you that you are to forgive us. And Joseph looked at his brother and said, hey, look at verse 21. He said, when you did this to me, you meant it for evil. But God had a plan. God has used me to save not only you, but the nation of Israel. And he says, I will. Fear not. I will take care of you. I will. God help me and my relationship with my boys to forgive them. Let me share with you another true story. I remember Rhonda and I were in bed one night. It was a Friday night. And our oldest son had said he was going to go to a movie. And he's supposed to be at the movies with some friends. And you get that phone call, you just know, and Rhonda answered the telephone, and she said, hello. And all of a sudden, she said, this is for you. Okay? That's one of those phone calls. It's about 10 o'clock. And it says, this Mr. Jones? I said, yes. Do you have a son named Eric Jones? I said, yes. And they said, we have your son down here, the jailhouse. I said, what? And I could hear my son in the background saying, please don't call my dad. Please don't call my dad. He's 16 years old. And they said, well, we found beer in his car. They said, will you come down here and get him? I said, do I have to? And they said, yes. I said, okay. So when I got there, they said, Mr. Jones, I want to tell you right off, your son has not been drinking. But he picked up some friends. And the friends had some beer. And because it's your son's car, we had to take confiscate his vehicle and lock him up in his fringe. And I said, okay. I said, well, one of the things that he was told upon receiving a car, that he was not to have friends in his car that smoked or drank. And he knows the consequences. And my son couldn't look at me. And I didn't want to look at him. And I said, well, come on, Eric, let's go home. And he knew that he was going to get that conversation. He said, do I have to? And I then told the deputy, do I have to take him home? Can he stay here tonight? On the way home, it's about a 25-minute drive from where he was incarcerated to our home. We didn't say anything, not one word to each other. When we got home, we sat around the table. Rhonda came in. And I remember telling him this. You see, I was mad at him. How could he do that to me? How can he do that to me? And it ain't going to be in the paper. How can he embarrass me? All I could think about was myself. But when that 25 minutes gave me an opportunity to calm down. And I said, Eric, I love you. And go to bed, and we'll talk about it in the morning. His mom and I talked, and I wrote down some consequences. Because he realized that. And he came back down the next morning about 7 o'clock, and we were at the table again. I said, Eric, I love you. And son, here's the punishment. It's not because daddy wants to punish you, because daddy loves you. I love you, son, and I want you to be in heaven with me. And for that reason, for 6 months, you're not going to be able to drive your car. For 9 months, you cannot have any friends over the house. You cannot talk on the telephone for 9 months. And he said, Dad, this is tough and difficult. I said, drinking is serious, son. And I know you went out drinking, but alcohol. I said, I can take you out to the graveyard of many young people who have died because they thought they had control of alcohol. And son, I want you to live. And he said, Dad, this is harsh and cruel. And I said, think about it. I said, 1 o'clock, we're coming back to the table, and we're going to talk about this again. 1 o'clock, he came back. He said, Dad, 6 months is not long enough. He said, I want you to take my car away for 1 year. He said, 9 months is not long enough. Take it away for a year. And for 1 year, he didn't drive his car. For 1 year. You know what? He's still alive and he's a good boy. And I'm glad that I was able to forgive him. But most of all, I'm glad my father has been able to forgive me. I don't ever bring that up, that incident, because you know what? I've done worse things than that to my Heavenly Father, and He's forgiven me. What's my whole point? Relationships are based on the ability to forgive and let live. Let me move on to number 5, because I'll be up here all day. Be willing to share your feelings and thoughts with one another. It's not enough to forgive. Be willing to share your feelings and thoughts to keep a relationship alive. I'm very introverted. I know it's difficult for you to believe that and understand that, but I'm an introverted person. I have built up around me a wall of protection that I never allow people to invade my space. When I put the preacher facade on, I could talk to anyone. But when I'm not in that preacher zone, I'm to myself, because I'm very comfortable. But I met a girl many years ago that's as extroverted as can be, called Rhonda. Rhonda can talk to a stop sign, and the stop sign would change and say, go, 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 just go, go. And when I met her, that was a thing that mesmerized me about her, that this lady, she can talk about herself. She can talk to anyone. Kid you not, we lived in Kansas City, Mississippi. And one day a lady called Rhonda the wrong number. And they talked for 2 hours. She called Rhonda back. She got Rhonda's telephone number. And every day she called Rhonda. And they would talk for 2 or 3 hours from just the wrong number. To the day she died. And when she died, the relative called Rhonda and told her that so-and-so had died. Rhonda never met the person. But she could talk to anyone. She's the only lady I know. There's two ladies at Freed Harbor University. When they know everything and they talk about everything. Rhonda's one of them. But guess what? She feels comfortable with herself. I've never felt comfortable until a few years ago with myself. And I've never allowed anyone to invade my space, and I kept all my personal feelings inside. And there were times early in our marriage that things were troubling me, and I never would talk about them. In a marriage, you need to talk about, in relationship with family members, you need to talk about what's eating you, and I would keep it in. I plead with you to avoid what we call gunny sacking. Gunny sacking is when something in a relationship, whether it's marriage or with your family member, is bothering you, and you keep it to yourself. You put it in an imaginary bag. Every time something happens in the marriage, you just put it in a bag. Guess what happens? One day, the bag will what? And you let out stuff 5, 10, 15 years. And so what I want to do now is share with you, what does it take to have an effective communication in any kind of relationship? There are three components. Three components, and I can share these with you very quickly before we move to our final point. Number one, you need self-disclosure. But there are types of self-disclosure that you need, and there's type of self-disclosure that you don't need. Let's look at these. These are types of communication. And believe me, I can spell communication, but this is closed. This is open. Types of self-disclosure. Self-disclosure can be low, or self-disclosure can be high. Let me share with you the type of self-disclosure you need to keep a marriage, to keep a relationship going in the church. You know, church members fall out with one another. You know, family members fall out with one another. You know why? Because we forget three things. Number one, self-disclosure. Self-disclosure is the ability to talk about your feelings and thoughts. And there's a way to do it. Now, suppose Ron and I were upset with one another. One type of self-disclosure to avoid is called conventional. Conventional self-disclosure. Conventional self-disclosure. Notice conventional self-disclosure. Communication. Suppose Ron and I were having a problem. We don't talk about the problem, nor do we talk about how we feel about the relationship. That's when you get mad with one another and you just sit there and watch television. That's not good. That's when people think problems will go away. Problems don't go away, they just build up. I encourage you to avoid conventional. There are a lot of marriages will stay together, but they're empty marriages. Avoid churches. People come together, they're upset with one another, but they don't talk about it. That's conventional. Another one, I strongly encourage you to avoid this one here. It's called controlling. Controlling is when you're upset in the marriage. Notice you don't talk about the problem. Communication is closed about the problem, but there's a high level of how you feel about one another. Suppose Ron and I were upset, and Ron wanted to talk about the problem and said, "Sammy, you're gone too much. You're never at home with the family." Notice, we won't talk about the problem, but notice I'm going to share with Rhonda how I feel. Rhonda, shut up and listen to me. I'm going out here and preaching. I'm trying to save people's souls. I'm trying to help people. You just leave me alone and don't be nagging me. See? High level of how I feel about the situation, but I'm not talking about the problem. Some spouses do that. They yell at one another, but the problem gets worse. This here will get you killed. This is when you're sitting there watching TV, you get hit upside the head with a skillet. Another one you need to avoid is called speculative. Speculative, notice you talk about the problem, but you don't talk about how you feel about the problem. This person is logical. Yeah, you know, you're logical and you analyze the problem, but you never tell the person, "I love you. I need you." You never tell your children, "I'm proud of you." You're always telling them, yeah, they know the rules, they know the boundaries. But you never tell them how you feel about them. That's not good. Yes, people, there are people that talk about their marital problem, but you need to always tell people how you feel about them. That's the seal. It's when people know they love you. And as church members, we need to not only live right and teach what's right, but we need to share with one another how we feel about one another. You see, that's what keeps a relationship going, is when people can talk about their feelings. Rhonda taught me to Sammy, tell me how you feel. And now today I can talk freely about my feelings because I'm comfortable with who I am. I'm a man with problems, but I'm a man that loves God. I'm a man that's not perfect, but God understands that, and he's not through with me yet. And that's not wrong. I'm not ashamed to talk about my issues and my weaknesses anymore because I'm human. And now I can live because I'm normal. And I can tell Rhonda that I love her and I mean it. And that's what this one down here is, contactful. Contactful is when you can talk about the problem and you can talk about your feelings. Don't ever end a relationship when you're talking about things and not tell people how you feel about them. That's what contactful is. It's telling people how you feel about them. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. The Bible says, let no corrupt communication come out of your mouth, but let your language be used to edify, to build up. It doesn't say you're not to talk about problems, but there's a way to talk about problems. Point out my mistakes, but you don't have to put me down in pointing out my mistakes. And Rhonda didn't have to point me out and say, you're a sorry, no good husband, but this man over here, he keeps his shot. No, that's a way to do that. So I encourage you, learn how to share your feelings with one another. The second thing in having effective communication is called TM, transactional management. Transactional management is that you have rules that govern the way you're going to talk to one another. You don't talk about one of the parents. You don't use profanity. You don't hit. You don't curse. Those are TM. In order to have effective communication, it's not enough to have self-disclosure. You must have the ability to regulate how you talk. You see, I explained something a few moments ago to you, that when I talk to my boys or with my wife, I don't talk standing up. You know why? I have a preacher's voice, it carries. That's why I always sit down and talk to them. Because I don't want to come across dogmatic. I don't want to come across too forceful. I'm there to listen. I'm there to convey love, not to show that dad is in control. And so I have a policy. I don't talk to my family when I'm standing up, because my voice carries. And they may interpret that dad is not listening. I want them to know dad is listening to what they're saying. So talk to me. Whatever it takes to keep that relationship going, that you can convey, that people know. If I can get inside of my head, the head of my boys, I know that when they're out there, they're going to think about daddy loves me because he's conveyed it to me. And not only are shows about putting food on the table and giving us material things, I'm going to do what it takes because, you know, that's what my grandmother Naomi did to me. And that's why I'm still in the church. Oh, my time is up. I'm not even gotten to point number four, but we'll pick up tomorrow. But let me mention number three, and we'll pick up tomorrow. You have to have situational adaptability. Situational adaptability means you have to be flexible in relationships. Flexible. Anything that won't bend will break. And I used to be that hard-nosed that I wasn't going to bend because I'm right. You can be hard if you want to, but you're going to lose your family members. Be flexible. Don't try to handle every situation the same way. Be flexible. Be willing to give and take. Oh, I wish I had time to work on this one here because I've changed a lot of ways I used to do things because I made a lot of mistakes and I almost pushed my boys away. But I realized the importance of being flexible. I almost pushed some people away out of the church because I wasn't flexible with people. As Christians, as spouses, as parents, and as grandparents, if we're going to keep relationship alive, we need to forgive and live. We need to share our feelings with one another. I'm sorry I didn't get to number three, but I'll try to make up tomorrow. May God bless you.